Parenting and Parents
on 702.
Parenting and Parents feature time. This is part two of our conversation that we started last week on being stuck in the middle of your spouse and your parents and who it is that should be coming first. Thank you so much, Themba Nduli, for coming back for this conversation. Leadership consultant, qualified relationship coach and public health specialist. And the lines will be open to you on 011-883-0702 and the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. Thank you, Themba, for coming back. We hijacked you.
Again. No. I'm starting to love this. I love it here. It's becoming my second home now.
I can see it. You're becoming the furniture here. We'll get your fingerprint, Nef, for security.
I would love that, yes. I just want to, you know, so that I don't bother anyone, okay?
Just to kick off, before we go to the many questions that came through from last week,
yes.
I'm wondering, what are the general sentiments that you get when this conversation happens? Because I had a couple of people chatting to me saying, oh, I heard your conversation. One of the things they noted is, I find it fascinating that you mentioned the Bible.
Yes.
And I said, well, that's a text that's quite well known, whether you're Christian or not.
Yes.
I don't know of any other text that is popular, even if it were in literature,
yes,
about what should be happening when a person grows up and they become their own person. And then, funny enough, somebody sent me a very interesting thing, and I don't know if you've heard this before. Don't let the family you come from ruin the family you're trying to build. I thought to myself, that is so powerful. Now, I want to kick off with asking you about this concept of creating your own family, because many people think mom and dad and siblings are my family.
Yes.
What is family in essence? Because when I came into the world, mama, papa, my siblings, that's my family.
Yes.
And there's no part in my conditioning, in what society has said, outside of getting older and knowing about the scripture, that has ever felt like at some point I must leave these people and do my own thing.
Yes.
It's only now as an adult that you consciously learn these things and make a decision to practice them.
Yeah, thank you so much, sis, for having me. I really appreciate it. I think you've raised a very important issue here. I think a large part of our upbringing is that we are conditioned to say, this is your family, this is your mom, your dad, these are your siblings, this is all you have. And that's what the problem is, because then when you grow up and you start, you know, interacting with other people, then you realize that family just grows above and beyond, you know, your immediate family. There's people that you can fall in love with and actually start a new family with, right? But the challenge is that often than not, we are not trained. Well, I argue, and I think from literature, that women most of the times are the ones that are trained for family. That is why even when they are young, they are given dolls to play with, they play house, this, that, and the other. But on the other side of things, their male counterparts are not trained when it comes to, you know, family and issues like that. That is the reason why you would find that in most cases it's women that easily adjust to, you know, being married, but men are still struggling with the whole concept of leaving their family members or their parents and cleaving to their wives. It's simply because for the longest of time you are taught to be a man and be strong, this, that, and the other, and then suddenly you fall in love with this girl and you are told, oh, you must marry this woman now. You must take her with to your own house, you must build your own thing, but you've been raised all along to say it's all about mom and dad in the house. Worse, stats have shown that more than 70% of men in this country are raised without their fathers. So basically they are raised with their moms alone in the house. Right. So those are some of the dynamics that I had play.
Can I ask a question? A thought came to mind as you were talking about men being taught to be providers, to be strong.
Yes.
And then struggling with the part of doing their own thing.
Yes.
Do you think there's a connection between the ability of being vulnerable and the ability to cleave? Because, you know, often when a person is being resistant to this concept of this is now the number one person, yes, in your life, what's held over their head is this is the person who birthed you. They've known you your whole,
yes,
life. They gave up everything for you. And I was introduced to the most beautiful concept by a woman who recognized in her later years that, you know, she was a toxic parent, and she speaks openly about it online.
Yes.
And one of the things she said that was so powerful is that when your children don't need you, all you, as in they don't need you for shelter, protection, anything, all you're left with is the relationship you cultivated.
Yes.
Right? So they can cut you off. They don't owe you anything. Yet, many parents want to hold this thing of, but I did everything for you, over your head. But no one asked them to. So I don't know if there's a relationship there between the ability to be vulnerable with somebody who is deemed a stranger.
Yes.
And this attachment to, but I did everything for you.
There is a very strong correlation between the two, simply because the only way one can actually cleave is by them actually leaving and disconnecting. And so you can't, for you to gain, you must lose. That's how it works. So you need to cut off the relationship. And by leaving, we don't mean that you need to abdicate your family members and just, abandon them and just block them because they are toxic. But, what we're talking about is you actually reshuffling your priorities around. So there is a very strong relationship between the two, especially given the fact that, more than 7 in 10 of these men are actually raised by their mothers. So they're still very much connected to them. You understand? And the mothers, on the other hand, because there's no husband in the house, they are very much connected to the sons. That is why it's very difficult for them to actually let go. So it's not only the son.
I would even go as far as some mothers and parents, they're not connected to their children. Their entire identity revolves around them.
Yes.
So when this child is now, in inverted commas, cutting them off, but we refer to that as deprioritizing them.
Yes.
You're just moving them further down the priority list.
Yes.
They don't know who they are outside of being Mang Mang's mom.
I was actually having that conversation with my wife the other day to say we need to actually start preaching and evangelizing the fact that mothers have to have their own identity outside being a wife, outside being a mother. Actually, as a parent, you need to have your own identity outside being a parent. You understand? What is it that you do? What is it that you love? What is it that you, what do you identify yourself as except being umamaga teemba, umamaga Mang Mang? You understand? And that's where the problem is, because then, they struggle, and that's why it causes issues with the relationship between the mother and the mother-in-law in this and the daughter-in-law in this case. You understand? Because the mother-in-law is struggling to let go of the son, and then the daughter-in-law is like, okay, I'm here now and I need my man. But the mother-in-law keeps calling. The mother-in-law is in the house all the time. You understand? Not giving them space. Not because primarily they hate the daughter-in-law, but simply because they're struggling with adjusting and leaving, their sons and letting go of their sons. So those are some of the dynamics that are at play, and it causes a lot of problems and issues. That is why we say then to people, be patient with the relationship. It has to be organic, and it might take some time.
Definitely. There was a message that had come through that said, "Hi, beautiful topic. Please note my mother-in-law and I are not communicating currently due to her gossiping, and she's been living with us for 10 years. She has always been disrespectful towards me and always talks about my way of living and my life, etc. I cannot even go on like this. What would you suggest in a situation like this? Because at the end of the day, I believe, which was what you reiterated, it's the job of the husband to protect his wife his family.
It is.
Don't put her in that position to even have to do that.
She doesn't have to fight for herself. She doesn't have to fight for herself. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics in this story. Number one, 10 years is a long time to live with a mother-in-law. Unless, of course, if there is something going on that makes her to stay in the house. I mean, it's a long, long time. And that, we have to be honest with that, that it, at some point, one way or the other, it does affect the dynamics of the relationship and the marriage, in one way or the other, because the mother-in-law is in the house instead of the other. But what's also important is that it's not the wife's responsibility to fight with the mother-in-law as such. It is the husband who supposed to protect the wife and protect and fight for the wife. You understand? One of the things that I learned in my journey, and one of the things I was advised on to say, as a man, you are a leader, you must lead. And leading is a mnemonic to me. To say L stands for loving, you need to love your wife wholeheartedly, body and soul. E stands for empower, you need to empower your wife. You make sure that you empower her the best way you can. A stands for exaltation, you need to exalt her and appreciate her. And then D stands for disciple, you need to disciple her and lead her in the right way. And all of those elements come to one thing, to say you need to protect. So in this case, it is actually the husband that's supposed to do that. But if the husband is not doing that, of course, the daughter-in-law is the one who's going to stand up, you know, against the mother-in-law and start, you know, having the conversation. And that's going to cause a friction, right? One of the things that I can advise is that set boundaries. And you must communicate those boundaries, and you need to, you know, be quite staunch with those boundaries, right? Mm. Communicate the boundaries. This is how far I'm willing to take, and I know beyond that, I can't take it. And your husband needs to know that as well, you know, because at some point they have to choose what's going to happen to the mother-in-law, because 10 years is a long time. It's
and
a long time.
Gents, please remember, there are things your mother will never do for you.
Hey, please say that slow.
And I'm being mindful of the fact it's picking up of children's school time. So you all know exactly what I am saying.
Yes.
Be very selective. And we're in no way saying cut a mother off. Don't prioritize her. If your husband was financially supportive, we're not saying, you know, cut out the finances. But you need to deprioritize her.
Yes.
It's also okay to have discussions with your partner before you decide to do things for both your parents, because it also goes both ways. In the same way we use the example of, if now each time my car breaks down, me, my poor husband, Temba, I'm calling my dad. Now at the family function, you're hearing people gossip, or Temba can't even fix the tire.
Hey,
like, yo, Temba, what thing?
You feel emasculated at that time.
Yes,
yeah.
So it goes both ways.
Yes, it does. It does.
We've got Dr. Jeff from Midrand, who has called us on 011-883-0702. Dr. Jeff, how are you?
Good day. How are you?
Good, good. Go ahead.
Yes, what a lovely topic. Closer to my heart.
Yes.
I also want to say hi to the gentleman. I didn't get the name.
Getemba.
Temba, how are you, sir?
I'm all right, Dr. Jeff. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well. You are speaking my language. You know, I agree. We need to do a lot of training to the young people, especially the men. That they need to understand that when you get married, you are actually becoming one with your wife.
Yes.
There is no more you and there's no more your wife. But now I don't want to tackle it from the, you know, biblical point of view only, but I want also to look at it from a general, you know, day-to-day life, so that we can reach everybody, even those who are not perhaps maybe people, you know, Christians or people who don't believe in Christianity or Bible. But in general, I remember when I grew up, you know, I used to read, you know, certain small, you know, tracts that were called Reader's Digest. I don't know if...
Take us back, eh?
Yeah, I always refer to that. I even, you know, I quoted that. I don't know where they went, those people. You know, they used to enrich us with learning, with knowledge. So I realized that last year when I lost my son, you know, in September, October, I wrote an article. I said, you know, it came from that Reader's Digest, whereby they say, when you reach 40, for instance, I'm giving an example, you must make sure that you have specific, you know, two or three people who you are not blood related, but they've become part of your family, not biologically, not because maybe you share, you know, biological surnames or whatsoever, but these are people that you spend life with, you know, in life, to your point that you are no longer even friends. You have jumped the stage of being friends. You know, someone can fly from England to come and support you when there's something wrong that you need as a support, which your brothers and your biological brothers and your parents can't do. Let me not take it long, but I just want to say that, you know, we need to know that our biological parents are just transport to bring us on earth. We don't belong to them. We belong to God. And we need also to train people to know that we are here for a reason. So when it comes to the issues of marriage as well, imagine myself for that matter. I don't have a mother and I don't have my dad. I lost my parents when I was young. You know, my mother took care of me and she died even before I graduated. I married my wife when you know, my mother and my dad, they were long gone. Imagine my wife has a mom and her dad just passed on a few years ago. But yes, but let me tell you, for the past
years. And Dr. Jeff, I just want to also just share, you know, condolences on you losing, you know, a child. I can't even imagine what that must feel like.
It was a very painful experience.
Yeah. We truly hope that you continue to heal there. We're just going to leave it there, Dr. Jeff. Thank you so much for sharing the sentiments that you have. We've got some voice notes that are coming through on 0727021702. But before that, there's Anonymous who says, the more I listen to this topic, the more I realize how much I failed to protect my wife for the first 7 years. Mm. COVID happened and we had some difficult discussions with her. I'm a work in progress. And I absolutely love any time a person is able to come through and acknowledge and see opportunity for growth and want to do right. So on that point, if a person recognizes it, be it the wife or the husband, that I actually made some mistakes here. Yes. I didn't prioritize this person. Mm. Where should they even begin?
I think the first part is actually really acknowledging that you really messed up. You did not do well. That's the first part. Secondly, if you recognize it, then it means your partner has been knowing it for some time or for the longest of time, and there's been damage that has been made. So you owe your partner an apology. You know, when it comes to the issue of changing, you don't just change internally. There's other people outside on the externally that have been affected by your behavior, and they've been affected for the longest of time. In this case, probably your spouse. Sit them down and acknowledge, you know, your shortcomings. So say, I have wronged you here, there, and there. When it comes to apologizing, you don't just say I apologize for everything. Name everything one by one. Babe. Name it here and there. You don't just
Thank
say I'm
you.
Sorry, gay.
Sorry,
gay.
Sorry, gay.
Mention
everything.
The has. Mention
and when
them.
You say what is sorry for, they say the one you are angry for. I love
so
that.
Mention them one by one so that your partner may know that you've got any insight as to how much your behavior has affected the relationship, and then be patient with yourself. And to the partner that has been on the receiving end of things, learn to forgive. Marriage is something else. Without forgiveness, you won't be able to survive in marriage, because we forgive each other time and again. You know, you do this, I do that, this, that, and the other. But then there's an element of forgiveness that plays a very important role in marriage. So to the partner on the receiving end of things, be forgiving as much as you can, and then accommodate, you know, and accept that this is a journey that this person is now embarking on.
And I love what you're saying is that because, you know, you are asking a person to unlearn things that they've been living with for possibly 40
toxic.
Years,
yes.
right? Mm. That transition period can take some time.
Yes.
What would you advise the couples to always come back to? I've seen some couples say, we have a code word when we know stop everything, it's an emergency. Yes, conversation.
Yes.
We have a, you know, what are those things that you've sort of seen in your line of work, especially if, for example, if you know your husband or your wife has to go now and draw a boundary with people that they have been living with like this for decades, their whole lives.
Yes.
Also to be thinking about how difficult that must be for them. So being with them through that process, helping them hold the boundary.
Yes.
Maybe it's, I'm going to draft a text to you because I want to vent, but I won't send it to my mom. Because what are the things that you advise in those situations?
Thanks. That's the great one. I think the first thing that we need to acknowledge is that one has to be accountable. And accountability, I love what Dr. Jeff said, accountability just goes over and above your partner. You obviously apologize to your partner and say to your partner, I am changing. And the journey is a bit longer. You know, it just does not happen overnight. So one of the things that you have to do is that you need to be accountable, and your partner must keep you accountable. Over and above your partner, there must be somebody else outside that can keep you accountable. It's very important, Rilebogile, to have someone that speaks over your life that is other than your family member. You understand? Someone that your partner can know that if I speak to my husband and my husband does not listen to me, then I would call and that is so and so. And I know that so-and-so will talk to him, right? It's a danger and an error in a relationship if you do not know the person that your partner respects and they fear. Very dangerous. So find that particular person, open up to that particular person to say, listen, I have promised my wife that I am unlearning certain things and I'm taking her through this journey of unlearning these things, but I need you to keep me accountable as well. So that if she's struggling to put me back online, to say, remember the promises you have made, at least you can call, you can come in and actually assist with that. So we need to be vulnerable in this journey of changing.
I would even go as far, and maybe I'm taking it too far.
Take it.
As apologizing to the parents to say, I'm sorry I gave you the impression that you are the most important person in my life. While I'm still trying to navigate and figure out my transition as creating my own family, I am relearning. But I'm sorry I gave you that impression because that has allowed you to do the things that you do. But now that I'm relearning and I recognize I need to reconfigure. And that includes you can't just drop by unannounced. You can't just blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And also, you know, it's a great tool as we wrap up. The best tool is to start saying to people, let me ask my wife.
Oh, yeah.
Or let me ask my husband.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you're a team.
Yes. You're bringing them into the equation.
Not to make them the bad guy to your family when you wanted to say no, but it becomes a joint thing. Now people, my brother says to me, you know, you need to speak to my wife, speak to your sister. We already know.
Yes.
There is absolute respect to all of the people sending through. I'm sending you so much love. So many people saying how their partners, both men and women, did not support them, how their marriages ended. And it is so difficult. In 30 seconds, final thoughts.
Final thoughts on this. Listen, to couples out there, the only way to create a comfortable home is for you guys to have uncomfortable conversations. Normalize having uncomfortable conversations. That's the only way you guys can have a comfortable space in the house. And then secondly, the journey to change is a long one. It's not an overnight type of thing. So be patient with your partner. Be patient with the change. And then, you know, I mean, there is actually a better way to do things. And there is a better, when somebody says, I apologize, accept the apology and then monitor their behavior as well, and then just keep them accountable. But nothing beats uthando. Love your partner.
As long as the apology doesn't come with khe at the end or
gay. Explain the khe. That's the final word.
Thank
explain
you so
the
much, Demba.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, and for all of your questions and vulnerability.